If we're going to be brutally honest about the state of South Africa's woeful mining performance over the last 15 years, we can certainly trace the roots back to the MPRDA, essentially replacing the principles of private law based on rights of ownership with the principles of administrative law based on conditional state licenses. And that, in essence, is the nub of the problem with which the industry has faced since 2004. And I'm standing here on the Standard Bank deck overlooking, well, a small patch of ocean as we can see it in the Cape Town Harbour, and ready to talk about the way the mining industry is being perceived both locally and globally. From a local perspective, I've got Wildo du Plessis, who's a South African partner in law firm Baker & McKenzie, and next to him is Richard Blunt, who's a partner in the Baker & McKenzie London office. Wildo, what's your gauge of the mood here this year, considering that we have moved forward? We've got a new mines minister, we've got a new president, and there is one, it was described to me yesterday, of cautious optimism. Do you get that sense, or does more need to be done?
No, Michael, I think that's absolutely right. Cautious optimism is a good way to look at it, especially if we compare it to where we were last year. Last year, this conference was doom and gloom. I mean, this year, there's definitely much more uptick. A lot of our clients that we're talking to sort of is asking and looking at new projects. A question, of course, is what do we need to make that happen?
So what do we need to make that happen? I'm going to put you on the spot there, because we've had the mining charter that has now been gazetted. We have some certainty around once empowered, always empowered. The contentious bits around free carry still seem to be causing some angst amongst investors. What do we need to do to attract investors back to South Africa?
Okay, so if we look at South Africa specifically, I think you've touched on it, we need certainty. And we're definitely moving in the right direction with the new mining charter that's been put on the table. There's discussions around that, but I think we need a lot more certainty. Certainty from a regulatory point of view, mining specific, but then of course also a bit more certainty to the extent you can get that from an economic outlook perspective. I think for South Africa specifically, we'll have to see exactly what happens with our general election coming up. It's very difficult to make a decision before that. And then of course there's some other issues that's completely outside of our control that plays out in the macroeconomic and the international scene. You know, how will a Brexit scenario affect investment in mining in sub-Saharan Africa? How do other sub-Saharan African jurisdictions respond to the uptick that we're starting to see in commodity prices again? So, but you know, certainty, absolutely crucial.
And with that, and talk of Brexit has certainly kept us very interested here in South Africa. Some would say entertained to see that perhaps the UK is following African-style banana republic politics, but less about that, Richard. From a mining investment perspective, the city of London has always been a key source of capital. The AIM market, very well known, and it is quite a tragedy that we haven't been able to develop the same pools of risk capital that want to invest into mining in South Africa. That's a side issue. How are investors in the city viewing South Africa at the moment and its potential? We seem to have just fallen off the radar.
Thanks, Michael. And I'd like to start by saying it is very nice to be here, away from Brexit and the chill of a London winter, and in the sunshine of Cape Town. But onto the question that you actually asked. So I think Wildo's points are well made. What investors want to see is certainty, and it's not just about the mining charter that gets a lot of press, but it's also about overall political climate, and it's about the economic position generally, and in particular around labour. I think the perception that we have at the moment is that it's very difficult to get investors to come into South African projects. And we've been surprised by how reluctant they are. In fact, even when you have good projects, people would prefer to put their money in other jurisdictions which they view as being safer. And you know, clearly the industry is less capital constrained today than it was 2 years ago, but the industry has learnt a lot over the last 4 years. A lot of people have had some pretty rough times, and they're not about to go back into the level of spend that they had historically. So capital decisions are being looked at very carefully. And on top of that, it's quite an uncertain outlook. So we know that the energy transition is driving demand for different sorts of minerals. What we don't know today is which minerals are actually going to make it through. You know, is it going to be lithium? Is it going to be cobalt? Will there be an alternative type of battery which will come out? You know, the technologies are all very young, and people are nervous about making big bucks decisions without knowing what that outcome will be, and having seen what happened to all their predecessors, particularly in the M&A space, who all got sacked off the back of decisions made during the last boom.
And I think that there is a big realization, certainly from the tone that I've heard from the minister and from the president, that we need to be competitive globally, Vildu, and to be competitive globally against that backdrop that Richard has just painted of a perhaps not a capital constrained environment, but a capital cautious environment where investors have been burnt in the past. We need to ensure that we are competitive globally. One of the big concerns that Richard mentioned is labour. Do you see that perhaps shifting a little bit? I know Neil Froneman is staring down AMCU at the moment, and there is talk that perhaps AMCU might even not last the next year, in which case we do see a radically altered labour environment.
Yeah, I mean, I think the labour issue in South Africa mining is, of course, it has been front of mind and it's been the most discussed topic for a while. The issue with our labour cost is when it's way too high. If you then have to sort of overlay on top of that the drive towards mechanization in mining to make sure that things are safer, how does that impact labor? And heading into an election this year, I mean, I just really can't see things drastically changing before then. Question is what happens after the election. It's not as if it's something that is on the agenda to say, you know, we have to look at it, but the competitiveness is absolutely correct. I mean, you just see results of companies that have divested out, you know, from South Africa, what they're doing, their results are doing, and people who sort of still operating here. There's quite a big gap at the moment.
And that's key. I mean, the all-in sustaining costs of South Africa's mines are generally higher. The reserves are harder to get to. Our labour costs have risen in excess of inflation for far too long. And the issues of automation have been difficult to broach in that context. I want to branch off a little bit and go back to your point about the energy transition, Richard, and how we're currently seeing in South Africa funding for new coal projects is becoming a very hot topic. Nedbank have become one of the biggest banks now to stick up their hand and say, we're not going to fund old, dirty fossil fuels. We need to decarbonize this economy. How do you see that playing out from an international perspective?
And so from an international perspective, it is clearly very, very difficult to fund coal projects. And where you have coal straight into power, you can get funding for at least part of it. But it's more difficult to get that funding than it would have been 5 years ago, and it's not getting easier as we go forward. So I think where are we actually going? I think part of the answer lies in how clean can your mine mouth power plant be. Can you strip out the CO2 and the other pollutants that come off the coal? If you can, then you have a better story. But the real question is how much is that energy source needed? So, in certain parts of the world, including large tracts of sub-Saharan Africa, there is not a viable alternative to coal as an energy source, and that means that you need to enable those projects to happen, because otherwise you're starving the continent of power, without which it cannot continue the path through to development. And so I think in essence it's a race between the increasingly rapid advance of renewable solutions, so localized non-grid based solar and wind, against clean coal and the cost which goes with clean coal.
And that's an important point, because you can have cleaner coal, but it will cost you at the end of the day. And they even at this stage, when we talk about the future of battery minerals, as you said earlier, we don't know which way that is going and where we might be in 5 to 10 years' time. So very difficult to make very long lead time, capital intensive decisions in that environment. I wouldn't want to be in your position at the moment. From an M&A perspective, Vildu, just as we wrap this up, are there any particular sectors that you are seeing a lot of activity in the moment? We know chrome and iron ore have run really nicely, and the gold price is at fantastic levels. A lot of consolidation, as we see with the Barrick story going on. Where do you see the hotbeds of activity over the next year?
So for the work that we've done with our clients, gold does seem to be a very sort of interesting sector. There's, as you said, a lot of consolidation happening, and a lot of consolidation that still needs to happen on a global scale. South African gold producers under a bit of pressure at the moment, but again, that's because of high labor costs, uncertainty in our regulation. Other sectors that we think is quite interesting is platinum. You know, platinum has always been at the sort of tail end of it, but we see that picking up quite a lot. You mentioned Sibanye earlier, you know, one will have to see exactly what happens with that platinum gold combination, but that's an interesting one to watch. And then the minerals for new technologies that that Richard mentioned, you know, to see what's going to happen there. But the issue there is you're not sure which mineral will actually become the one.
Which horse to back, in other words, from an international perspective, Richard?
Yeah, so I'd agree with Wildu's comments, and I think palladium is also an interesting component of the PGM mix, where that's really boosting the value that you're getting out of PGM assets at the moment. We've seen lots of activity recently in gold, in the battery metals, so lithium, for example. But one of the things that I also think is worth flagging is that the energy transition will drive demand for battery metals, but we don't yet know exactly which. We do know that it will drive demand in copper and in aluminium for electric vehicles and for electrification generally. And that's a big part of the reason we're seeing a continuing bull market for copper.
Well, I can certainly agree with that. From my perspective, I've got my hands on a BMW i3 for a week last year, driving it around Joburg. There is some infrastructure you can charge at our studios at Melrose Arch, for example, but you can't travel too far out of your range and radius. So a lot needs to be invested in that infrastructure, but I can see the market heading in that direction. Just the pure joy of owning a vehicle that you know has fully decarbonized. They are really performance oriented, and in the long run, when we see the costs coming down, certainly cost competitive against petrol and diesel options. When we start to see that inflection point, I've seen some reports at around 2024, according to Bank of America Merrill Lynch. But to go back to the issue of M&A and funding of a lot of these deals, we've seen the theme of deleveraging balance sheets over the last few years. Will you see streaming still play an important role? You mentioned Sibanye earlier. They had a big streaming deal last year, Wildu.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's what we see more and more, is because of the difficult road to access traditional capital, especially in the mining sphere, companies are turning to streaming, and we've seen that more and more over the past couple of years. Started off, of course, not in Africa at all, but all of a sudden there's a renewed interest in the streaming possibility. Now, there's different models that one can use, but the very attractive thing for a miner is that your streaming obligations literally ebb and flow as your own production facilities ebb and flow. So it works perfectly for miners. We've done quite a lot of them globally, and I think the trick is going to be for African miners: how do you make sure that you access that that market or that source of capital, and then apply it in, you know, whatever you want to do for your project, your mine?
Yeah, I completely agree. We've been seeing this trend internationally for quite some time. And I think, insofar as one can, the lesson one would draw from the streams we've seen in place so far are often you put in a stream because it is difficult to access capital at the right price. But once your project's up, you may well be able to access capital at a better price than the stream. So it's very important when you put your stream in to allow for an exit and to allow for some sort of security sharing arrangement, so you can put traditional debt in as well to take out the more expensive stream at the right time. And obviously that's directly contrary to the interests of the streamers, so that's often a bit of a debate.
A bit of a tough negotiation there as well. I didn't ask you, and I'll end off on this point, about Eskom, which is obviously the state-owned elephant in the room. We are hoping to see something from the President in the State of the Nation address on Thursday, Wildu. Are you confident that we'll be able to get our heads around solving for the Eskom crisis without doing too much damage to the South African economy?
Well, I wish I could say absolutely yes. I think Eskom for South Africa is, you know, I had an old Jewish friend who always used to say, what do you do with a hole in your head? Well, nothing, you live with it. So Eskom is something we need to solve. Will we be able to solve it before elections? I'm not sure. I mean, there's everything goes hand in hand with Eskom. You know, whether you can actually put up price competitive renewable energy projects, how does that work? What do you do with the vastly overstaffed people who work there? You know, I mean, how do you deal with that? Where do you absorb them into? Should we break it up? So, in short, yes, I think it's something we will solve. Will we solve it before elections? I sincerely doubt that, but one will have to see what happens.
Richard, from an international perspective, I'm sure it is one of the key issues, along with labour, that investors are looking at right now, security of power supply.
Absolutely. And for lots of these assets and projects, if you don't have security of supply on power at a determinate price, then you don't have a project.
And of course, I mean, as we saw with Gold Fields today, they've just announced quite a big renewable project at their Granny Smith mine in Australia. There are solutions, but they just add to the project cost. And in this environment, we certainly can't be adding to cost. We need to be stripping costs out. Well, on the note of stripping, chaps, enjoy the rest of your time at the Mining Endeavour this year. I'm sure we'll touch base in the hallways, but it's been great getting your insights into where we are globally in the cycle. And Richard, from an international perspective, how miners and investors are viewing miners in South Africa as well. Thanks for your time.